Now we will go to take a look at the Koreas first, the north, about which we don't know very much, but at least we know something. And I suggest that you go to look also at Gapminder. The statistics are quite interesting because even though nowadays North Korea is very poor, and we know that there has been famines, people have not had enough to eat there, it used to develop quite rapidly, about the same pace as Southern Korea, until the end, well, at least until the 1980s. And only after the Cold War ended, Soviet Union collapsed, which had been selling cheap oil and energy to North Korea. Only after that, the real trouble started there. So it is possible to develop your economy also even if you are a closed state. A few days ago, North Korea even launched a rocket. And the Korean Central News Agency, which is sending from Pyongyang, which also has an office in Tokyo, in Japan, gave the following news from that. Scientists and technicians of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea successfully launched the second version of satellite Kwam Byung-sung 3 into its orbit by carrier rocket Unha 3, true to the last instructions of leader Kim Jong-il. At a time when great yearnings and awareness for Kim Jong-il pervade the whole country, its scientists and technicians brilliantly carried out his behests. To launch a scientific and technological satellite in 2012, the year marking the 100th birth anniversary of President Kim Il-sung. The weight of the satellite is supposed to be about 100 kilos, and these are South Korean estimates of it. Its orbit is 95 minutes, and it circulates the globe around 500 kilometers high. So even nowadays it is circling somewhere above our heads. There was a failed attempt to do this in April this year, but at that time the rocket exploded before it came very high up. North Korean rockets and North Korean nuclear development has been in the agenda in East Asia and the whole world for many years now. It's able to go on developing its devices, and now that it has been able to put a rocket to the orbit of the Earth, means that it can now basically reach any place on the Earth. Also, it does not yet have, as far as anybody knows, outside of North Korea, a nuclear debris that can be small enough, compact enough, developed enough to be carried in these rockets. And even though there's not so much food in the country, also the big famines are over, it still goes on putting lots of its resources in this kind of high visibility weapons development. The reason being, quite probably, that the dynasty, the Kim dynasty, is able to stay in power when it shows this kind of achievements to its citizens. One more thing about this. Time in North Korea is different from the time that we have here. We move on from year to year, neutrally named years. But North Korea is living in a kind of dynastic time. President Kim Il-sung is still mentioned in this kind of newscasts. And the previous leader, Kim Jong-il, is also mentioned. Time is calculated not only in years, but also in terms of these previous great leaders, which again shows that the maintaining of the power position of this dynasty is important. The earlier of the history of North Korean missile development goes like this. Its origin is in Soviet Union missiles acquired to North Korea during the Cold War. And first one built in North Korea used to be called Hwasong 6. It was one stage ballistic missile. In 1990 and 1993, these kind of missiles were launched towards Japan. Korea was a Japanese colony until the end of the Second World War. And Japan is still considered one of the big enemies of North Koreans. Its range is about 500 kilometers and it covers all of South Korea. It can carry a weight of 6,000 kilos. And it can be equipped with a chemical, biological, or cluster warhead. And it has been calculated, these are again South Korean figures, perhaps 600, perhaps 300 only, of them are aimed at South Korea. And these missiles also bring currency, money, to North Korea, because they have been exported at least to Iran, Libya, while Muammar Gaddafi was still in power there, and Syria, Vietnam. Perhaps not whole missiles to Egypt, but at least components. Egypt has also its own missile development attempt, but it needs components from somewhere, and North Korea has been willing to provide these. Then came the so-called Rodong, with North Korean dialect, or Nodong, with South Korean dialect, and which NATO calls Scud missile. It's also a one-stage ballistic missile. The first launch was also towards Japan in 1993. The first one exploded somewhere in the Japan Sea, but this is clearly a bigger one. It can carry a warhead of 15,000 to 16,000 kilos and carry a chemical or biological warhead, also a nuclear one, but North Korea does not yet have one. And with this missile, North Korea has been cooperating technically with Iran and Pakistan. But no sales of whole missiles have been reported thus far. But both Iran and Pakistan are also developing their own missiles. So there are a number of countries with which North Korea can cooperate in this kind of technical development. In the last years, North Korea missile development has gone on higher stage. Taipodong 1 and Taipodong 2, especially the second, a more developed version. It is a big one. It is a three-stage ballistic missile developed on the basis of the earlier ones. And it has been calculated to be able to carry 33,000 kilos of explosives or diseases to a distance of 2,500 kilometers. With this, it can basically, theoretically, reach even to the western coast of USA. In theory, it would also be capable of sending a satellite to an orbit. North Korea claimed so in 1998 and tried to do so, but it exploded on its way to the heights. A three-stage missile is more difficult to control than one-stage missile because it explodes when the first or second stage is supposed to come into action. And technology to do that has not been too developed in North Korea. Taepodong II was first launched in 2006 and it exploded within 1 minute. The new one, it doesn't have too many resources. It takes many years to build a missile of this size. It was launched in 2009. The first stage was a success. The second stage just did not ignite, and so the later stages fell into the Pacific Ocean. But the missile flew over Japan, which made Japan strengthen and renovate its missile defense systems. So kind of military competition is going on in East Asia because of this. Then in October 9th, 2006, North Korea claimed that it had conducted a successful underground nuclear test. Well, it can have been true. Cannot have been, it was not clearly recognized outside of North Korea. After international negotiations, North Korea promised to halt this development after that. But in April 2009, especially because tensions with South Korea became deeper and hotter, it announced that it will reactivate its program. And very soon after that, it detonated a nuclear bomb. And this was clearly noticed by seismological equipment in other countries around North Korea. So it now has a nuclear bomb and capability to build it. What is this country? Its official name is Democratic People's Republic of Korea, chosen Minjujui Immin Gongfakuk. The history of the place is a long chosen dynasty that was in power from the 14th century onwards. It used to be a quite closed kingdom. It was called Hermit Kingdom by its neighboring states, minding its own affairs, sending diplomatic envoys sometimes to Japan, once a year to China, but not having much to do with the rest of the world after that. This dynasty may be important because it never became a Western colony, any colony or any Western state. In 1905, Korea became a Japanese colony, but officially 1910, but from 1905 onwards, Japan practically was able to control the country, which ended only in 1945. It sort of has been the most, let's say, eastern state of the whole world in all its history. Soviet Union liberated or conquered it, drove the Japanese away in 1945 and kept power, its military forces there in 1948. After they were withdrawn, Chinese influence became stronger in North Korea. In 1950 to 1954, there was the Korean War, which devastated much of the country, especially the southern part, because most of fighting took place there. North Korea was able to conquer most of the southern part of the country with the purpose of unification until the United Nations, practically the United States, came to help. Then the fighting went on throughout the country, and the southern forces pushed the fighting line almost to the northern parts of North Korea, and China sent troops to help. And then when both sides were too tired to fight anymore, they made peace, and that's where the boundaries are also nowadays. It has an extremely large army. The number of military personnel in active duty is more than 1 million. And in this sense, in terms of manpower, it's number 4 after China, USA and India. Also, its population is only 24 million people. So it is not only putting its resources on missile development and nuclear development, but it's also keeping it the best of its labor force in military duty. And probably mostly for domestic reasons, a strong army maintains stability in the country, protects the leadership and the elite. But you also have to create some kind of work for this kind of this large army. So being prepared against South Korean, American, perhaps Japanese attack is what the army is maintained for. Of course, it also does lots of construction work and so on. But it is a fighting unit. Always, much of it, large parts of it, are ready for immediate action. North Korea has had 3 leaders thus far. The first one of them was Kim Il-sung, the first president. Born 1912, died in 1994. And he is still the president of North Korea. He is eternal president because he is in such an exalted position that no latecomer can achieve his position. He created the country. His son, Kim Jong-il, born probably 1941, perhaps 1942, probably in Soviet Union, nobody knows clearly, never became a president. He was the chairman of the National Defense Commission, supreme commander of the Korean People's Army, and general secretary of the Workers' Party of Korea, holding the 3 most important posts in the country. But he never became the president. In North Korea, a leader stays the leader until he dies. He never retires, never becomes a pensioner. We are actually witnessing a kind of imperial structure in the sense that we have a royal dynasty where one of the sons becomes the new leader and the power stays within the family. So the old chosen dynasty period imperial system still goes on and on. And keeping the power in the family and keeping the family head as the figure, as the face of power, seems to go well with the Korean population, North Korean population. It is the most classical type of leadership, and that's what they are following. After Kim Jong-il died, one of his sons, but not the oldest one made a bad mistake, a stupid mistake. About a decade ago, he wanted to go to Tokyo Disneyland to see what Disneyland is like. So with a fake passport, he traveled to Japan, not from North Korea, but via some third country, and tried to enter the Disneyland where he was caught and find out that he was a North Korean, son of the leader. So he was returned back to Korea. But this was a shame and a sign that he is not fit to be a leader. So he was not chosen. The second son is said to be too effeminate, too interested in poetry, not strong enough, not strong-willed enough to be a leader. The third son, Kim Jong-un, was chosen. He was born perhaps 1983, perhaps 1984. Again, nobody outside of North Korea knows exactly. He's now either 28 or 29 years old, currently the youngest head of state in the world. Also, he cannot become a president. His grandfather is the president. And another reason why he was chosen may be that he resembles, his face looks much like his grandfather. Again, a reason to keep the population in peace, not revolting. He's the first secretary of the Workers' Party of Korea, first chairman of the National Defense Commission, and supreme commander of the Korean People's Army. Basically the same post that his father was also occupying. He studied in Switzerland. He has been abroad, again with a different name. It's not actually clear how many years he studied there, because probably also his brothers have been studying in Switzerland with fake passports. So nobody knows exactly which one was where, in which school, at which time. But he has good knowledge of living abroad in Europe. And it is also said that this North Korean elite family, they have meetings in Switzerland in very expensive holiday resorts there. So there are people from North Korea who go abroad, who know the outside world. Otherwise, the population does not know. If you are North Korean, you want to buy a radio, you can buy a radio. But it does not have a device with which you can look for different channels. You can listen to only one channel, which is the official state channel. So outside propaganda does not easily come to North Korean population. They hear what the state says. Kim Jong-un seems to be continuing this kind of policies, but he has made one important renovation. Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-il never showed their women to the population. They always appeared as one male who is the leader. Kim Jong-un has become used to the idea that heads of states often appear with their wives. And he brought, from last year onwards, his wife, whose official title is simply this, his wife, Comrade Ri Sol-ju, who is probably a few years younger than he is, very beautiful woman. She brought her openly not only to North Korean television, but also to pictures showed to the outside world. The regime itself may be as strong as before, but its image is much softer because a beautiful woman is being shown around with the leader. This may mean that he is also willing to do other kinds of renovations also. He's expected to do that also because the neighboring countries like China or South Korea, rest of the East Asian area, is growing so rapidly. And North Korean economy is not doing well. It's getting relatively poorer and poorer all the time. So if the international situation would be okay, North Korea, under his leadership, might be willing to engage in the renovations. Actually, already during his father, there were these kind of movements, and we will go into this later. And he might be even more willing to do that. When the change of power was taking place, there were speculations about possible elite infighting within North Korea and possible revolution by the population in North Korea. But everything seems to be quiet. Kim Jong-un has been consolidating his power. He has been sending away to retirement people who were faithful to his father, and putting new people on their place. But all this seems to have been taking place quite peacefully. No internal military fighting between the elite. So at least at the moment, his power seems to be quite stable. And because he's so young, and if he's able to hold his power, he may stay there for decades to come. We don't know yet. North Korean economy, North Korean GDP growth, these are figures from the Bank of South Korea, but published in July this year. In 1990, at this time, the economy started to contract, and the famine set in. From 2000 onwards, North Korean economy seems to have been able to grow. Well, 1 year was high, I don't know the reason for this, but slowly, slowly. You can grow also within an economy that is quite closed, but not completely closed. But from 2006 onwards, it seems again to have entered a place where there is hardly any growth, perhaps even contraction. Last year, perhaps again a small growth. But the economy is not doing well. The figures here down are figures for South Korea, because Bank of Korea, of course, engages also in propaganda. But anyway, South Korea is doing so much better than North Korea in most years that the situation is always tilting in favor of South Korea. How does North Korea get funding for these trips to Switzerland and so on, and it's maintaining its army and its missile and nuclear power developments. It has exports. Weapons is one, both the missiles and also hand weapons to many kinds of guerrilla opposition organizations all over the world. Minerals, it has a substantial, quite big mining industry. There are lots of metals in North Korean soil. They are exported mostly to China, also to other places. Chemical products, some of these minerals are developed more. Textiles is one export item, mostly to South Korea. So there's trade between these two countries. And tourism. About 10 years ago, tourism started to be developed as one currency-bringing industry. But a few years ago, it was halted again. It depends on the year. Sometimes you can get in, sometimes not. If you are Western European, North American, or Japanese. But Chinese and Russian tourism is, to my best knowledge, still going on to North Korea, bringing in currency. So there are exports. It is a functioning economy, not too well, but it goes on. And if the leadership maintains power, it can go on for a great number of years. It doesn't seem to be collapsing in any time soon. About the famine, it was the first large-scale famine in peacetime in a modern industrialized economy. And North Korea is an industrialized country. The basis for its industrialization was set during the Japanese colonial period, when North Korea, or the Korean North areas, was one of the places where Japanese developed their industry. South, not so much. South was more food producing region, rice, basically other agricultural products. But the North was developed as an industrial center. So that was the basis. Nobody knows clearly how many people died in the North Korean famine. The lowest figure presented is 200,000, the highest 3.5 million. Anyway, lots of people died. And the reason being the collapse of the Soviet Union, which ended cheap energy flowing into North Korea. The economy deteriorated. When I was a young man, we used to get to libraries for free, journals of North Korea. Colorful pictures of machinery and trains and trucks and machines about advancement. That has stopped. And there have been also floods period destroying crops, or drought periods also destroying crops, meaning that North Korea has not been able to control this kind of natural phenomena very well. The most serious famine seems to have started in 1994. 1996, 1999 seem to have been the worst years, but the poor levels of nutrition are still continuing even to this day. If you are rich North Korean, they are rich North Koreans, it's not a problem, but big parts of the population are living on a very poor level. From 1995 to 2006, there was food relief sent to North Korea by United Nations, USA, South Korea, China, and Japan being the main donors. But from 1996 onwards, the international situation became so tense that the North Korea declined to take anything anymore. Some help through the UN, United Nations, has been going on after that also, but the big, massive amounts of help have not gone on. North Korea has actually made many economic reforms, although it has never announced them publicly. We now have in North Korea also private economy. They are private entrepreneurs who drive with second-hand Japanese cars in the streets of Pyongyang or on the countryside. Many of them used to be imported either from Japan, not so much South Korean cars because it's the principal enemy country, but more from Japan. It seems that if we think of families, the women, the mothers, are the principal breadwinners. Males have to be present in workplaces, in factories, in the army, in the military service, in state administration, wherever, whether there's work or not. And there's also lots of construction going on in North Korea, but it's hand labor. You have a man and a spade or other hand equipment. And the death rate of males in this kind of occupation is very high, probably the highest of all males in the world. At least this is what South Korean sociologists who have been interviewing North Korean refugees tell. Women do most of the private economy. They can grow food, knit things. And actually, it seems to be quite possible, and thousands of women seem to be doing this. The North Korean border towards China is not hermetically sealed as the southern one. People seem to go to China, especially women, to work there a few months, collect money, and then come back to North Korea. Sometimes people are shot on the Yalu River or caught and brought to jail or hard labor camps, but people seem to go back and forth. So there's economy, there's the public economy, but also private economy has been emerging. What is different with North Korea and other East Asian countries is that the private economy does not deal much with external trade, which most of it is done by state-owned companies. The southern border, the Korean Demilitarized Zone, it is the most strongly, carefully guarded border in the whole world. No doubt about that. It's 248 kilometers long, it's 4 kilometers wide. There are heavy minefields, there are iron fences, and military patrols regularly walk there around, patrolling all the time. But otherwise, it's empty. It's a sanctuary for wildlife. There are animals and birds living in conditions which you can find nowhere else. Sometimes there are military exchanges. During the Cold War, when North Korea was stronger, they used to try to dig tunnels towards the south. First one here. The southern capital, Seoul, is here. It's not far away from the border. And I don't remember which one it was and which year it was, but they have been able to send commandos via these tunnels all the way to Seoul. And they reach near the presidential palace, and then they were caught. I think the other tunnels were noticed when they were being made and destroyed by South Korean military. It is possible nowadays, as a tourist, to enter some of these tunnels. The South Korean part, of course, not the North Korean part. They are sealed in the middle. There was, of course, has also been gunfight between these patrols that move within this demilitarized zone. And in 2010, 2 years ago, there were very serious clashes at the maritime border here in these areas. The land border is more quiet nowadays, but the sea border seems to be the place where the conflict plays itself out nowadays. First, we had here Gyeongpyeong Island, this one here. Let's talk about the borders. The blue line is a border, maritime border, between North and South Korea. It was drawn by Americans after the Korean War. And for decades, many decades, North Korea did not challenge it. So the southern part thought that North Korea accepts it. But from 1970s onwards, there has been quarreling also about this border. And this red line, line B, is what North Korea claims to be the correct border. It is basically a straight line from here. Here it is accepted that the same thing is true. But North Korea accepts that these islands here, 1, 2, 3, and 3 ones here, are effectively controlled by South Korea. It demands them for itself, but accepts that they are South Korean islands. So it has drawn this kind of channels, demanding that South Korean vessels go through only these channels to these islands. People are living, civilian people are living in these islands. South Korean Navy does not obey North Korean demands. So one day in spring 2010, a North Korean patrol boat was traveling here, staying south of this, south and west of this blue line. It had a crew of 104 people. It was shot with a torpedo from the north. The boat sank, and almost 50 sailors, South Korean sailors, died. Then the next autumn, from North Korean side, there was heavy shelling or cannon fire to this island, Bangyeong Island. The casualties were not as high. Two soldiers, two civilian people died, and many tens of people wounded. South Koreans have also, of course, answered the fire and shot with cannons to North Korean side, and we don't know how many people have died there. So it is a living conflict where the parties still exchange fire with each other. But after 2010, it has now been quite quiet for 2 years, but nobody knows when it will evaporate again. Six-party talks is something that for many years was considered as a solution to the North Korean problem. They were held between 2003, 2007. The members being North and South Korea on the opposite side of the table, then China and Japan, Russia and United States. being in the leadership position, because USA is the leader of the world. Because we have here the entrance, and the leader is sitting opposite to the entrance. I don't know how much China is satisfied with its position, but that's where it is said to be. They were cut in 2007 when the tension became deeper. It has always been a discussion after that North Korea has to return to this table, and the six-party talks have to be started again. In April 2009, North Korea announced never again such talks. Even this year, in the beginning of this year, United States diplomats announced that they are trying to get this group together again into this table, but it did not happen. And because of this missile launch, first in April and then a few days ago, which succeeded, it seems that even the USA does not want North Korea to participate in this kind of peaceful talks. The discussion now is about sanctions against North Korea, but how do you sanction it? It's so closed already. The situation is not unavoidable. It seems that North Korea would be quite willing to discuss bilaterally with USA. Normally, any state that is situated beside a big state, like North Korea is neighboring China, or Finland neighboring Russia, does not want to be left alone with this big power, because this big power can have quite strong influence to the smaller power. It is said that China is the only friend of North Korea, but probably it is not a friend, it's simply a state that controls it to some extent. But even Chinese control cannot reach very deep. North Koreans knew what they want. In the 1990s, North Korea conducted bilateral negotiations with the United States and also with Japan, but not as much, but also with Japan. At that time, there were less tensions. What happened in the early years of this millennium is that USA got a new president, George W. Bush, who placed North Korea into a so-called axis of evil position, named it as an enemy state, which seemed to hurt North Korean feelings, was considered as great offense. And after that, the six-party talks were put to place, but they don't seem to satisfy North Korea. We don't know how long the situation may continue, but the six-party talk seems to be an impossibility. China is getting stronger all the time, and USA does not seem to be willing to forgive North Korea the nuclear bomb and these big missiles. But this situation can go on for decades. Nobody is in a great hurry to change the situation. So for the time being, and we don't know for how long, there may be no changes in this situation. That's it about North Korea.